DiGilio here, and we are reviewing movies, which we do every Saturday. Eric Childress, Colin Suter joined me, and we got a lot to talk about. It's been a while since we've been on. You know, we had a couple of Cubs games there, and then Roy Leonard passed away, and we took a couple of Saturdays, one to salute him and one I took off last week because it was the funeral that day, so I took that night off. But we're back, and we're going to review the movies. So here's Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello.
And here's Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hey, before we get to the movies, Colin?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. What's with all the U2 hate? Do you have a take on this?
Well, you know, for me, it was it started out cool. You know, as a U2 fan, there was no better gift than like suddenly getting the album in your hands,
yeah,
for free, on just without ever having hearing a single first. That was awesome. But I think I think the hate just stems from, you know, people having all of a sudden having this U2 album that they didn't want, especially people who don't like U2, and you know there aren't as many fans as there used to be.
Right.
And you know I kind of sympathize with them because you know if suddenly there was a Bon Jovi album in my iTunes library that I didn't want, I'd be pretty mad too.
Yeah.
Because now I got to figure out how to delete the damn thing. And it's not easy to do, which is why Apple came up with this, you know, other thing.
Device that you have to, yeah.
You know, it is inconvenient. So I sort of get where it's coming from. And U2 is an easy target, you know.
Well, I actually think the album kicks ass.
I do too.
I really think it's a great. I think it's a great record. I think it's a great record. It might be their best since all that you. What was it? All that with the Beautiful
Day
On.
You Can't Leave Behind.
I think it's their best album since then.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people are saying that. Yeah. You know, I think it's a very good album. I think it's. I'd put it in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's like it tracks to the 3, 4, and 5. I can do without, but the rest of the album I like a lot. So I think that's where the hatred comes from.
Here's the thing that I find really ironic about this whole thing. Okay, yes, and everything that you said is absolutely true. U2 is an easy target, you know, and people didn't want. But here's the thing: people are bitching about the fact that they have to pay for stuff online. They get something free, and then they go nuts.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's so insanely ironic. It's like, oh, I got to pay for this. I got to pay for that. I got to pay to download this. You get something free. You get an album from one of the best bands ever. For free, and you bitch about it. You can't. Yeah. You can't do right. There's no. You know what I mean? You can't win.
You can't win. Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
The music industry. You know, people are very passionate about their music. You know, and when they hate hard. And I'm one of them. So.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, but I wanted to talk to you about that since that broke.
Yeah. What?
But I think the record's great. I don't care what anybody says. I really like it a lot. Are they touring, Colin?
They will tour supposedly next year.
Yeah,
but we don't know what kind of tour it's going to be yet. But we'll see. I'm excited. So,
all right, cool. Since we haven't been on in a couple of weeks, last week's big movie was Stringer Bell in Home Invasion. So, have you guys seen the Stringer Bell Home Invasion movie?
Have not.
No, Colin.
Nope.
I didn't see it either. Wow, we missed the Stringer Bell Home Invasion movie.
Yeah. It was sponsored by the NFL, wasn't it?
Oh, boy. Oh, man.
Come on.
Now, how about Dolphin Tale 2? Anybody see that?
I actually did see that.
Well, tell me a little bit about Dolphin Tale 2.
Okay, well, you know, the first Dolphin Tale is based on a true story, and but, you know, mostly the dolphin stuff is true. All the characters, all the human characters, I'm pretty sure are made up. So basically this is the same thing. This is also based on, you know, the further adventures of the dolphin who had a prosthetic fin attached to it so it could swim. And, so this is the further adventures and what has happened to him since. And basically this movie is kind of like just, it doesn't have as, the story isn't quite as focused as the first one was. It's just all these dolphins that get found, you know, found beached on in Florida, that get taken in to this, you know, marine biology, you know, sort of amusement park kind of place, and get taken care of and then released back into the wild.
Yeah.
And so this one is just kind of, it's kind of all over the place. It's kind of a, because it doesn't really have a central story. It's just all these dolphins that come in, they get saved, and they get released. And then there's a turtle that gets saved, and that gets released. And, you know, there's a wacky pelican flying around and bothering everybody that I'm also pretty sure is not based on a true story. The first one I gave kind of a mild pass.
Right.
You know, it's a harmless family film. It's an interesting story. It's educational, which, you know, if you're going to take your kids to something, that's pretty good. And this movie, you know, its heart is in the right place, and it tries to be everything the first one was, except it's not really as charming because the kids are kind of grown up and they're kind of whiny teenagers now instead of, you know, a boy and his dolphin,
yeah.
Not a whiny teenager and his depressed dolphin that doesn't like swimming anymore. So it's like, okay, I don't think kids are going to go for this, but, I guess you could do a lot worse if you're going to take your kids out to see something right now. There's not a whole lot to choose from, but it's not, I don't quite recommend it either.
Okay. All right, Eric.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Skeleton Twins, shall we?
Okay.
Sure. Please go ahead. Tell everybody about the Skeleton Twins.
Okay. This film had premiered at Sundance this year. It's where I saw it. It stars Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig as a strange brother and sister. They've been strange for like 10 years. On the day that they both decide to commit suicide, one of them is slightly more successful than the other, Bill Hader's character, and winds up in the hospital. As part of his rehab, he ends up going to live with his sister, for the first time in a long time. She also living there as her fiancé, played by Luke Wilson. And the movie is about the rediscovering of their relationship, sort of old wounds that heal, some healed, some not so healed, as they sort of discover, you know, the friendship that they had as siblings, that the special relationship that they really had when they were growing up, and how times have changed them and sort of the mistakes that they made and are in some cases continue to make. And the film does so with a lot of humor really terrific dramatic performances by Hader and Wiig. I think this actually might be the best screen work that either of them has done, particularly Hader, who I think is tremendous in this movie. And Luke Wilson, I think, is probably the best thing performance he's given maybe since Royal Tenenbaums. He's really funny.
Well, I would say Enlightened, but that's just me.
Well, that's TV.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay. But it was one of the best movies to play at Sundance this year. I was wonderfully taken by it. Hader and Wiig been so great for so many years in Saturday Night Live, and usually whenever they appear in movies, it's always almost always a treat. Here together, the two of them, their chemistry is you know pretty flawless. That has maybe the best lip syncing scene in the history of movies. Something we discussed at Sundance. Could we come up with a better lip syncing scene in the movies?
It's the only one that comes close is Live and Let Die. With Jennifer Lawrence.
But she's also singing that.
So, well, she is singing. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, this one they're lip syncing. So very very specific category. But no, it's a wonderful movie. It's one of the best movies out in theaters right now, and you should absolutely go see it.
Okay, Colin.
Yeah, I echo pretty much everything Eric said. I always knew Bill Hader had a great dramatic performance in him. It was just something I've always known or, you know, had a feeling about. And I'm glad that we're finally seeing that because he really is great in this film. And I also want to mention Ty Burrell, who there's a subplot involving him that I thought was handled very it's interesting the way it's handled. I won't say too much about it, but there's a relationship there between him and Bill Hader. And the backstory of that, you know, it could have been handled so many different ways. And I thought the way this movie handled it was really unexpected. And, I went with it. It was partly because these two actors, you know, are so good, at pulling it off. And, yeah, I think this is definitely one of the best movies out there. It's one of the few movies I can recommend, you know, without having to qualify it or anything. It's just, yeah, go see it. It's a really terrific film.
Well, that's why I wanted to mention it. We hadn't been on it. And I think this is absolutely I loved this movie. I loved it. I think it's one of the best movies I've seen all year. And I can't, you know, I mean, you guys know that I'm a Saturday Night Live freak.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, these two performances, Hader, obviously, you guys, Hader in particular, I mean, come on, man. It, beautiful work, like really beautiful, nuanced work. And you know, I agree with you about the Ty Burrell subplot. I also think, I always like when Joanna Gleason shows up in movies.
Yeah.
I love her. I think she's awesome. And she's, you know, Monty Hall's daughter, for God's sake. So, you know, but I love her. And I think she's.
Dirk Diggler's mother.
I'm sorry?
And Dirk Diggler's
and
mother.
And Dirk Diggler's mother. Boy, she had some issues
oh,
with.
Oh, God.
Man, that's a. man, oh,
ever.
Man. Worst mom ever. Yeah, maybe the worst mom. One of the worst moms ever to not kill anybody.
Motivated hate.
Oh, my God. Just so horrible.
Oh.
Anyway. Anyway, Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, Skeleton Twins. Seriously, funny. Really poignant, just terrific stuff, man. I can't say enough about it. You know, and when I see movies with, like, you know, some of the SNL people in them, I always root for them. And this is a home run on both, for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just it's great. It's great, and it's the one movie that I can recommend, like you guys said, unqualified. I think it's one of the best films of the year, and I think it's definitely at this point the best movie that's out right now in theaters. And that's The Skeleton Twins. So look for it, watch it, because it's awesome. All right? All right, you guys hang out, okay?
Okay.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got more movies to talk about, and we got the on-demand stuff and more. We haven't been reviewing movies in the past couple of weeks, so we're going to catch up right here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. Hi. Here till midnight when the lovely Amy Guth comes in for Red Eye Remix. We are live in the Allstate studio here, the Showcase studio. And we welcome Colin and Eric back. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Eric, really quickly, because we only got a couple of minutes before we go to news. Can you give me the best two movies that you saw at Toronto last week?
Yeah. Well, the best one is my favorite of the fest was one I talked to you about called Spring.
Yeah.
That was the romance monster movie.
Right.
That was the best thing since David Cronenberg's The Fly.
Man, that's a big statement.
Of that limited genre.
That's a big statement, man.
Yeah. It hasn't been picked up for release yet. I still stand by that statement, and I hope people see my point of view on that when it eventually comes out.
Mm-hmm.
My second favorite film of the fest is actually Wild, Reese Witherspoon's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This one really kind of took me by surprise. I'm not always in favor of when people put themselves in some perilous type positions, especially if they're going to, you know, walk
that movie that Sean Penn made was a piece of crap.
Well, that guy was a D-bag.
Yeah, he was. You're going to do that, you're going to die. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm glad how that one ended.
Yeah.
But no, Wild, you know, while it's this movie about this woman who took this 1,100-mile trek that a lot of, you know, hikers do. It's not like it's a big accomplishment, but a lot of people do it, the Pacific Coast Trail from Mexico to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And she did it as a way to sort of, you know, in a way to sort of get back on the path. I mean, she calls herself Cheryl Strayed. So you have, you know, things like that within the movie.
Yeah.
But it's all about her sort of, you know, getting back on path after some family tragedies and decisions that she made infidelity and other, you know, really poor choices that she made with her life and drugs after, you know, this horrific stuff happened to her with her family. And I think Reese Witherspoon is just terrific in the movie. It's one of those reminders just how great an actress she can be.
Yeah.
When she gets, you know, three or four of those really bad, you know, rom-com or bad comedies out of the way. She does a movie like this, and I really believe she's the front runner for Best Actress right now.
Wow.
And also, speaking of Enlightened, Laura Dern plays her mother in the movie, which seems like odd casting.
It is.
She's only like 9 years older or something,
yeah,
something like that. But like Reese Witherspoon also like sort of plays herself as like college age in the movie.
Okay.
So Laura Dern plays her mother in the film. She has a real chance of a supporting actress
awesome
nomination as well.
She's, I love
really
her.
Terrific.
I love and, Laura Dern.
Yeah, and it's her stuff because the way the movie is sort of, it's sort of flashbacks between the stuff that led to her taking this trail walk, intercut with the, you know, that the trail walk itself.
Wow.
And the scenes with her and Laura Dern just really bring the movie to the kind of life that the story kind of deserves. I mean,
right,
it was directed by the guy who did Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, so this guy, you know, this is sort of two in a row for him.
Good. Okay, cool.
I thought it was terrific. It really sort of took me by surprise, and I really loved it.
Okay, so that's Wild with Reese Witherspoon, and we'll see that sometime in the future. All right, everybody hang on. You got to hang on. It's Colin and Eric. We're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Here till midnight, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you have a movie question or a movie comment. It's movie review time. Colin and Eric join me every Saturday night for movie reviews, and we welcome them back to the show. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about let's do the on-demand stuff. Nobody saw any of the on-demand movies, correct?
No.
We can just go through and talk a little bit about what they're about. What is Bold Eagles?
You know, I you can't seemingly find it.
Yeah, I tried IMDb. I tried to find it earlier, and I was like, what?
Yeah, I just had it up here on the actual on-demand, and one second. It looks like it's an animated film, because I found one of the actresses was in a movie called Agent FOX. That we talked about on demand some time ago.
Yeah.
Hold on, I got it here. Bold Eagles.
Bold Eagles.
New for $4.99.
Oh!
Keeping the Eagles safe is a full-time job in Eagle Park.
Uh-huh.
Okay, especially when they and many other animals suddenly go missing. Okay. The famous Eagle Park police, Radar the police car, and Dottie the otter must step in and uncover the mystery.
Oh, Dottie the otter.
Dottie the Otter.
Okay.
Yeah. Doesn't rhyme.
Why didn't they call the movie Dottie the Otter?
I don't know. Why couldn't they come up with a name that rhymes with otter?
Well, Bold Eagles, I guess it's a take on Bald Eagle. Is that the thing? Because that's just stupid. All right, let's move on. Don't Blink.
Don't Blink.
Another on-demand movie.
10 people arrive at a secluded mountain resort to find it completely deserted. With no gas for the return trip, the visitors are forced to stay and investigate the mystery surrounding the abandoned lodge.
Yeah.
So that sounds like Identity to me, basically.
Which I loved, by the way.
Yeah, and it stars Mina Savari and Brian Austin Green.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Nice to see they're working.
Right. And okay. Robert Picardo's in it, so.
Oh, wait. Is Joe Dante involved in something?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think
so. I thought the only way that guy gets work is if Joe Dante's involved. okay, next.
Next.
Is Felony.
Felony. Three male detectives become embroiled in a tense struggle after a tragic accident leaves a child in a coma. One is guilty of a crime. One will try to cover it up, and the other attempts to expose it. How far will these men go to both disguise and unravel the truth?
Wow. Now, this is written by Joel Edgerton, who is also in it.
Yeah, co-stars Joel Edgerton, co-star of Warrior. The Great Warrior. If you
Which
seen
nobody
that.
Has seen that movie.
Right.
Exactly. But it rules.
See that.
Yep.
The Joel Egerton, he co-stars, he wrote it. Also, Tom Wilkinson is in the film. Yeah. And Jai Courtney, who is that that guy that we don't want to see in movies.
Wait a minute. What, who?
He was the bad guy in Jack Reacher. He was in Divergent.
Oh, God.
You know, he was the McClane's son in the Die Hard movie.
Yeah, God.
Yeah. Go away.
Well, see, that's an issue. But you got, I mean, this is outside of that. That's it seems interesting. Edgerton wrote it. Tom Wilkinson.
I mean,
Wilkinson rules.
A couple years ago called The Square.
Yeah.
That is terrific. So that's, you know, there's promise there.
Okay. Now this next one, Steve Cochran had Michelle Monaghan on. Last week to talk about this film called Fort Bliss with Michelle Monaghan, who I like very much and was awesome in True Detective. So
yes,
what about Fort Bliss?
Mm-hmm. After returning home from an extended tour in Afghanistan, a decorated U.S. Army medic and single mother struggles to rebuild her relationship with her young son. Sounds almost exactly like the plot of Trucker that Michelle Monaghan was in.
Yeah, it does, doesn't
exactly
it?
Exactly the same plot.
Yeah. Now, what was it? Wait a minute. What's that movie with grumpy Twilight girl, Kristen Stewart? Isn't she in a military movie, too?
Yes, Camp X-Ray.
Camp X-Ray. Okay, I was getting these two confused.
October, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was getting those two confused for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one premiered at Sundance. I'm not sure what Fort Bliss played.
Yeah.
But I like her, so.
Yeah. So that's available, Fort Bliss with Michelle Monaghan.
Ron Livingston. Yeah.
Okay, and then the next one is Life's a Breeze.
Life's a Breeze. Hold on, I'm pulling this up here really quick. Life's a Breeze. This is tells the story of a family as they search for lost fortune around the streets of Dublin. So, Colin, that's for you.
Well,
oh, okay.
Wow. All right. Yeah. So immediately, it's for Colin.
Well,
you know, I'm half Irish too, man.
Yeah.
We've both been there.
I've been there. I love Dublin.
Yeah. Okay,
I love Dublin. All right.
All right.
So it's a family looking around for, they search for their lost fortune on the streets of Dublin.
Yeah.
Well, at least it'll look good because it's
right.
Dublin. Yeah. Okay. All right. And then the last one is The Scribbler. What is The Scribbler?
A young woman is facing her destructive multiple personalities using an experimental new procedure known as the Siamese Burn.
What?
Siamese Burn. Was that a better title for the movie?
Yeah.
I would think.
The Scribbler. See, that sounds like a bad Batman villain.
It does.
It's like guy who's like, yeah, I'm just going to take a pen and I'm going to write on the wall.
Yeah. So. That's like Burt Ward, Adam West, Batman villain bad.
Yeah.
But the cast, it's a good cast. If you want some eye candy, that's certainly there. I mean, Katie Cassidy, Garrett Dillahunt is in the film.
Oh, he's good.
Yeah, Michelle Trachtenberg, Michael Imperioli, Gina Gershon, Sasha Gray, Billy Campbell.
Wow.
So, Liza Dushku.
Wow. Ooh.
Yeah. So,
I like her, man.
Yeah, so 88 minutes. R-rated?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Cool.
All right.
All right. Well, there you go. That's the on-demand stuff. Let's get to the theatrical stuff. Eric, tell us about The Guest.
Okay. The Guest, another Sundance premiere opening this week. The Guest stars Dan Stevens, who I guess made his mark on Downton Abbey and has popped up in a couple movies this week, the first of which is The Guest, where he plays... an ex-soldier who seemingly has come back home, and he's visiting the home of one of his comrades, one of his fallen comrades. His family is aware that their son has passed away, but now they have this guest show up at their front door who can actually, you know, recount his, you know, sort of his final days and telling stories about him. And so eager are they, you know, to sort of hear these stories that they invite him to stick around the home as a guest in their home. And as he sticks around, he begins to sort of ingratiate himself into some of the various problems going on in the family. Dad is having some problems at work. The kids are having some bully problems at school. And being a soldier, he knows exactly how to deal with bullies. But there might be something off about this guy, as his superiors from the special forces are very eager to find out about his whereabouts. So this is a movie that takes a number of twists and turns. It's sort of an old familiar story of the person you invite in your home, and you're not quite sure if they're all exactly what they seem.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie was quite a bit of fun. Watching this thing, I think Dan Stevens is really terrific. He's got a really great screen presence, and as we'll mention that in another movie later on. And I think he makes a great foil with his family. It has a real dark sense of humor. The film was done by the guys who did You're Next, and some of the segments from the VHS series. These guys know how to craft a nice little sort of throwback narrative. My only sort of complaints about the movie, I think the third act takes a few too many familiar beats. It just kind of turns into exactly what you kind of hope it doesn't turn into. And it's like they had like this one sort of really big idea at the end and had to find a way to get to it. But that being said, there's more than enough in the first two thirds of this movie to recommend it as a fun little thriller
cool.
To check out.
Cool. I mean, it's the guys who made You're Next. That movie rules.
Yeah.
I also noticed that Cedric Daniels... From The Wire.
Yeah, he is the guy, the leader of the special forces who is after this guy.
Cool.
Whatever reason.
It's ridiculous that I will continue to do this forever, where I will not refer to anybody from The Wire by their real name.
Mm-hmm.
He's Daniels, man. That's what it's like. Stringer Bell movie from last week.
That's a Stringer. And McNulty's got a new TV show coming
out. New show coming on, man. I mean, come on. So, all right. Well, we'll take a quick break, you guys. Hang on. And we'll get to some more new movies coming up here. It's Eric and it's Colin, and we're reviewing movies. 2-1-2-900. Nick DiGilio here. Hi. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios on Michigan Avenue. 312-981-7200 if you have any comments or questions about movies. We're doing the movie reviews with Colin and Eric, and let's welcome the guys back. Welcome back, guys.
Hello. Hello.
All right. So, Colin, I believe you're the only one who has seen This Is Where I Leave You.
All right.
Which I want to see. I'm curious about. So you tell me about it.
All right. Well, this is an ensemble dysfunctional family comedy with a pretty big cast. But the story is that the father of the family has just died, which brings everyone together under the same household for the first time in a long time. And they have to stay together for a week to mourn the death in a Jewish tradition, even though they aren't really Jewish, as kind of a last wish by the father. But mainly you have four siblings, played by Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, Adam Driver, and Corey Stoll, who people would know from House of Cards. You have their spouses with, they have dysfunctional relations with their spouses, which have to do with cheating, having kids, not having kids, and basically, being a grown child, which is sort of the Adam Driver character. Their mom is played by Jane Fonda, and she's the typical, like, waspish type who gets implants and boob jobs to keep from growing old. And Ben Schwartz from Parks and Rec plays the childhood friend that nobody actually likes. So I started by saying that this is a dysfunctional family comedy with an ensemble cast. And if you were to make up a list of cliches that go with that subgenre of, you know, dramedies or comedy dramas, chances are you'd find 90% of them in this film. You have the pregnancy stuff. You have the siblings being pitted against each other. You have the big misunderstandings, you know, people being alone in a room together. You have a reoccurring gag involving a toddler. And, you know, many more cliches that I mentioned when I described the story. You know, and I can forgive a movie for being cliche if the movie is funny. But this movie is only occasionally funny. And that's, you know, to say that with Tina Fey and Jason Bateman and Adam Driver in the cast, and many, they all have moments. Tina Fey has probably the most, and Bateman isn't bad. But basically the cast makes this film watchable. So it's not a bad movie, but they all deserve a much better script than this. And, it's just kind of one of those movies. I think I forgot about it when it, as soon as it was over. So this is a movie I wanted to like, much like you do, because of the cast, which, you know, makes it watchable. But I kind of just sat there thinking they could all do a lot better.
Oh, that's too bad. It's such a great cast.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and Rose Byrne is in it too. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, it's a. I mean, wow. Okay.
The problem with a lot of these kinds of movies is you spend a lot of the time just kind of staring at the cast, going, "Who thought these two looked like they would be brother and sister?" You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's no home for the holidays.
See, now you're talking.
Yeah.
See, that's a great movie.
That is a great movie. It's no Home for the Holidays, but it's no Garden of Fireflies either. So you know, somewhere in the middle.
All right, so somewhere in the middle.
Is that what it was called? Garden of the Fireflies or something?
Grave of the Fireflies.
Grave
of the Fireflies. Or is that the animation
movie?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the one with Julia Roberts and Emily Watson.
Fireflies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that was a terrible movie.
Brutal.
So this one falls somewhere in the middle.
Okay. You know? All right, cool. Yeah. All right, Colin, Eric, hang on. We got much more movies to talk about here, and we're reviewing the new movies at 312-981-7200. Movie reviews continue on WGN right after we take a break in the news. Hi, Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here till midnight. The lovely Amy Guth will be here with Red Eye Remix coming up at 12 o'clock. You can hear me regularly weekday mornings between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. I'm your overnight guy, along with my great producer Dan Chagrou and Ted Novak. And my great producer on Saturday nights, Dan Long, my man. We are here now. We're talking about movies. Colin and Eric are here, and we welcome them back. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hey. All right, Eric, tell us about Tusk.
Okay. Well, this is the latest film from writer-director Kevin Smith.
Right, and you told us about it a little bit earlier because you saw it in Toronto.
Yes, it's a film that started off as sort of a joke on one of his podcasts, we'll get to that in a bit. But the film stars Justin Long as an American podcaster who is kind of a jerky guy. He likes to make fun of people, and he's headed up to Canada to actually interview one of these YouTube sensations that everyone is currently mocking. And when he gets up there and that doesn't exactly work out, he's at a bar and he finds a notice from a guy in sort of a house out of town who is promising to tell his story, sort of astonishing tales of his times on the sea and during World War II. So he goes to his house, and they share some stories, and they have some lovely tea. The gentleman is played by Michael Parks. Next thing you know, his Justin Long's character is being drugged. And should I go on from there, Nick?
Well, you know,
it's really not a spoiler to say where this movie's going.
No, because, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the reason that this guy has brought Justin Long to his house is because he wants to turn him into a walrus. Now, the reason he wants to turn him into a walrus is because he had this experience in during the war where he was stranded with a walrus that he lovingly named Mr. Tusk. And things didn't work out between him and Mr. Tusk the way he would have liked, and he's regretted it for, you know, 50, 60 years now, and is looking to basically rebuild his companion in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, basically you sort of have Human Centipede, you have, you know, basically the sort of the start off of this movie. And the movie started off as this podcast. Smith and Scott Mosier came across this ad where this guy wanted to dress up as a walrus, and Smith, you know, took it, I guess, to the I guess the next logical step, if you can say that.
Logical?
I know, if you can say that. And, you know, just like, hey, you know, he gets high one night. He's like, hey, I'll do a movie about turning a guy into a walrus.
Yeah.
And he did it.
Yeah.
Okay. And we were both, you know, fans of Red State.
I love Red State. I think Red State's I think it's one of Kevin Smith's best movies.
I don't know if I would go that far, but I thought it was a leap for him as a filmmaker.
That movie scared the crap out of me. Really, really tense, scary, beautifully made movie.
Yeah, you know? I agree with a lot of that, I think and the ending and it was a movie that it didn't have a lot of comedy in it, but when it did, it knew when to interject.
Right.
It, particularly in the final scene with John Goodman.
No question about it. Absolutely.
Yeah, a hilarious ending to that movie.
Yep.
The problem with Tusk is that its tone is so all over the map. I mean, it starts off as like it's looking like it's going to be sort of another Kevin Smith kind of raunchy comedy with a lot of vulgarity, and then it's, you know, as Justin Long gets to Parks' house, it's sort of like it's going to take on sort of, and it's kind of hitting almost the same sort of beats as Red State, although it is kind of winking a little bit at the audience, but at the same time is trying to go for a certain horror type mood, and then once the walrus sort of reveals itself, the movie stops becoming scary because then the movie sort of takes a shift over to the girlfriend and the best friend trying to find Justin Long, and now we're shifting back into comedy again with a cameo appearance.
Oh, man.
That I'm not going to give away.
No.
But a cameo appearance that stops the movie in its tracks.
Absolutely. And when you said that, and I didn't know who it was, when you reviewed it last week from Toronto, I didn't know who it was, but you could not be more what a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, a disaster cameo appearance.
Yeah, I don't even put the fault on the actor.
No, absolutely not.
No, the fault lies with Kevin Smith, because Kevin Smith basically, and you can see it as you're watching it, and you're like, look at who I just got to be in my movie.
Yep, absolutely,
I'm going
man.
To leave the camera on this guy as long as humanly possible, and like, oh, and let's give another flashback to this character as well with Michael Parks. And that's the scene. The scene between him and Michael Parks is where the movie, you could just walk out.
Absolutely.
You could just walk out because the movie is just dead.
You're absolutely right. Eric, you're absolutely right. It was like, I got this guy in my movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to, boom, I'm going to put the camera on him. And,
Yeah, and it's just like whatever was sort of mediocre up to that point just goes downhill from there.
Yeah.
And this is a leap back for Smith as a director or any kind of filmmaker.
Well, I mean, I'm a fan. I'm like you, I'm a fan. Of Kevin Smith, and you know, I think Chasing Amy is a phenomenal movie, the best movie he's ever made.
Mm-hmm.
I think Clerks 2 is better than the first one.
I agree.
Don't care what anybody says.
I agree.
I could not go with him on this one. I hated this movie. Yeah. Colin, go ahead.
Well, I feel like I had an advantage because I didn't know anything. I didn't hear Eric's review. I didn't know that this was based on a podcast or anything like that. I swear, other than knowing that Kevin Smith directed it, that's all I knew going in.
All right.
Seriously, didn't look at a trailer, didn't look at anything. So I think I was more on board with it for the most part than you guys were.
Clearly.
I don't know. I was really kind of back and forth with it, but it went where was not expecting it to go. If I was describing the plot, I would not have mentioned The Walrus. But then again, I don't know what's out there already.
Oh, it's out there already.
It's a hashtag.
It's already out there. I mean, if you see the trailer, it's in there.
I think that's a mistake. I
agree.
It's so much better not knowing anything going in. And I clearly had a better time than you guys did with it. As for the cameo, at that point I was just like, well, it's already audacious enough. And then when it goes back, when it goes back to the story of the Walrus, then it goes on, when it goes full Walrus, let's just put it that way. When it goes full Walrus. I was going full Walrus. Going full Tusk. I was like, all right, you know what? Bravo, Kevin Smith. You just totally outdid yourself in being audacious. And I actually do think, we talked the last time we were on the air, we talked about Sin City 2 and about how Robert Rodriguez hasn't grown as a filmmaker at all.
Yeah.
And, him and Kevin Smith got started around the same time. They kind of came up together at the same time.
Yeah.
And I do think Kevin Smith has taken another step forward as a filmmaker.
Oh, I agree.
Just visually, I think his shots, there are some really beautifully composed, beautifully lit shots in this movie that you would not expect from a Kevin Smith.
Colin, I'll agree with you on that. I think he's grown into being a really good filmmaker. I mean, Clerks was all about the script. Was all about the words. There's no question about it. And most of his movies, he put the camera there and people talked. But he's become a better, we mentioned Red State. I think Red State is a beautifully directed film.
It is a good film.
I really do.
I think Kevin Smith has become divisive more so than a lot of filmmakers just because he's attacked critics.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have turned on him, and I think that, and I haven't been one of those guys. I let the work speak for itself.
Yeah.
I don't care, if he hates me because I don't like Cop Out, so be it. I like all of his other movies.
Yeah, but the other thing is, the guy hates Magnolia, but I still like his movies.
Right.
And he made fun of that in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
So when they went to the guy's house, and they beat the crap out of the kid.
Magnolia fan.
I think it was Magnolia fan 2 or something, and they go to the kid's house and they beat the crap out of him. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have to review the new Liam Neeson's movie. So hang on. Here we go. Quick break. We'll come back. Liam Neeson's after this. Yeah. All right, Nick DiGilio here, wrapping up the show here, and the lovely Amy Guth will be in with the Red Eye Remix coming up. Colin and Eric are with us to review one more movie, and Colin,
yep.
Tell us about A Walk Among the Tombstones.
All right, well, Liam Neeson plays a private investigator who he works for himself. He no longer works with any police department. He gets hired by this drug kingpin whose wife has just been kidnapped. And he hires Neeson to find the kidnappers because it's a lot safer than hiring cops, obviously. And Neeson reluctantly takes the job and sets out using his very particular set of skills to track them down. He has some help from people on the street. He has help from a homeless street kid who he meets in a library. And he kind of takes him under his wing reluctantly, and eventually he finds the killers, or rather people who might be associated with them. But the movie also depicts what the killers do. So this isn't a movie where you have to figure out wait and see who the killers are. They tell you pretty early. But really, this is a character study more than a thriller for Liam Neeson's character, who is a recovering alcoholic living, you know, with the demons that have been scarring him ever since he left the police force. And I won't give that away either. But this is really a great role for Neeson, lest you think he's doing another variation on, you know, Taken or Nonstop. This is a much richer film than that, and the main reason to see it. As a thriller, it mostly works. It's written and directed by Scott Frank, who is responsible for many great scripts, including Out of Sight and Get Shorty and Dead Again. So he knows what he's doing, and this has that sort of old-fashioned 70s cop thriller feel to it, and I think the screenwriting has a lot to do with that. You know, he's a good dialogue writer. I think the movie's third act falls apart a little bit. There's a bit involving the 12 steps of AA that didn't quite work for me, but it also becomes a little bit too standard of a thriller in the third act. But I like Scott Frank's writing, and it's a great showcase for Liam Neeson, definitely. And, on the whole, I do recommend it.
Okay. Eric?
Yeah, I like this film quite a bit, actually. And for all the reasons that, Colin mentions that, I mean, you hear Liam Neeson in Kidnapping, you immediately, you know, think the Taken movies, but, although he does get to threaten people on a phone.
Yes, he does.
Yes, yeah,
he
very,
does.
Very, very well, yes. I might say. it's not that kind of movie. It's definitely more in the sort of a noirish kind of feel, even sort of like, David Fincher type serial killer type movies. This movie falls right in line with those. People might not know that the character that Liam Neeson plays is actually once played by Jeff Bridges in a movie called 8 Million Ways to
yeah,
Die.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the same.
Oliver Stone wrote that movie.
Yeah.
It was Hal Ashby's last film.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So Lawrence Block, who wrote these films, and this is the one that, people weren't too crazy about that one, but this is the one that I think that, I would hope would catch on, because I would like to see more stories involving this character. I love the way that, not just Neeson's character is really well put together, but, all the supporting characters. Dan Stevens, we mentioned from The Guest, plays
yep.
the drug dealer,
yep.
Who I think has a really great screen presence. And just, everyone around him, even small perfunctory characters are sort of rich and odd and, full of detail. The thing, we were talking about, people taking major steps to the director. I mean, this is only Scott Frank's second effort after
The Lookout,
which
was terrific.
A really solid little movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Lookout was a terrific movie.
Yeah, and yeah. I think this one's even better. I think this one, he really has a handle on, not pacing and editing and how to craft, just individual scenes with dialogue and where to put everything together.
Yeah.
I really like this film a lot, and I really hope that people catch on to it, because I'd really like to see more stories of Matthew Scudder.
Matt Scudder, yeah. Listen, I'm actually a huge fan of 8 Million Ways to Die. I think Bridges is phenomenal in that movie, and I know that Hal Ashby was like locked out of the editing room.
Yeah,
wanted his name off of the film, but I still think it's terrific, and I actually thought this movie was terrific. I thought it was great, and yes, they're advertising it as though it's like Taken 4.
Yeah,
but it's not that. And he does, yes, it's someone's kidnapped, and he's on the phone and making threats. But that's all you see in the trailer. But there's so much more going on here, so much more going on, and a really great performance from Liam Neeson in this movie. Like a really interesting and complex. I thought this movie, I echo everything you guys say, and I think I even liked it more. Maybe I liked it more than both of you. I just thought it was absolutely terrific and much better than I thought it was going to be, because I went in thinking it was going to be another Taken movie, and that's not at all what it is. If you think, oh, yeah, it's going to be Taken, it's not. There's a lot more going on here. It's a lot more complex and a lot more interesting. Not that Taken isn't bad, because Taken rules, but it's just on a whole nother level. So, all right, what do we got next week? We got the Equalizer, right?
We got the Equalizer next week, and we also got the Box Trolls.
Oh, God, I can't wait to see that. I can't wait to see it. Oh, my God, the Box Trolls. Okay. All right, you guys, we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, take care. There you go. There's Eric, and there's Colin, and they will be joining us next week.